Good morning. Welcome to session 3110, entitled Chronic Stress in Adolescents from Disadvantaged Communities, a Public Health Response. My name is Terry Wright, and I will be your moderator for the session. And I'm welcoming you for coming, and there are blue folders that you may take with you. I'm going to talk a little bit about the center. I'd also like to welcome our panelists and my colleagues, Kelly and Leslie, as well, from the Center for School Health and Education. And where do I move to this? Okay, here we go. All right, so the session objectives are to describe the social determinants of chronic stress in urban minority and immigrant adolescents, and to explain the value of public health approaches to the management and prevention of chronic stress in urban and immigrant adolescents. That's the focus of this session, and the Center for School Health and Education at the American Public Health Association is the sponsor for this session. Just to get a little bit of the business out of the way, the presenters of this session, Drs. Amina Batata, Dr. Olga Acosta-Price, as well as myself, have no financial or commercial relationships to disclose. Again, I'm the moderator, and I would like to start out by telling you a little bit about the Center for School Health and Education, which is a new center at the American Public Health Association. It was established in 2010 with a focus on dropout prevention as a public health priority, supported by a couple of policies, one at APHA, as well as Healthy People 2020 objectives. The policy at APHA, which for those of you who are new here, there's a process for establishing position statements on different issues. It's going on right now, as a matter of fact. Every year it happens. Members advance significant policy issues to be able to create a position statement that APHA will support in various ways. And so back in 2010, a position statement was put forward entitled, there's seats up here. Are these seats taken over here?
There's three
right
here.
Oh. Okay. Is that yours? Maybe, yeah. Okay. And so the public health, APHA policy number 20101 speaks to public health and education working collaboratively across sectors to improve high school graduation as a means to eliminate health disparities, which elevates graduation as a public health priority. Furthermore, Healthy People 2020, our nation's major health policy document that guides a lot of the work that we do in public health, has an objective specifically regarding educational achievement. And that's Healthy People Objective 5.1, which speaks to graduation from high school with a regular diploma in 4 years after starting ninth grade. It's very, very specific. Graduation in 4 years with a regular diploma after starting ninth grade. Highly unusual for a health policy document to have an objective speaking to graduation, which we typically see in the silo of education. We don't typically think about it in health. And yet, for the next 10 years, we will be governed by this policy document. And it's such a significant indicator of health that it's identified as one of the leading health indicators in Healthy People 2020. So that shows you the significance of graduation. So why? Why does high school graduation matter? Dropouts experience, and much of this you know, but just as a reminder, experience a shorter life expectancy. They're more likely to suffer from chronic illnesses such as cardiovascular diseases, cancer, infections, lung disease, and diabetes. Many of the chronic adult health issues that we in public health try to prevent and or implement strategies around early intervention, right, or secondary prevention. Dropouts earn 41% less income than someone with a high school diploma. And yes, it improves more with a college diploma, but certainly with a high school diploma, it is a significant compelling difference in adult health status. Dropouts are 28% less likely to have health insurance coverage than college graduates, and they're less likely to have social conditions, live, work, play, worship, and the social conditions that promote health as an adult. So it's a significant factor, and we all know this intuitively, and when you look at the epidemiological data, we know, we see it on graphs all the time, the difference in adult health with high school graduates versus those who did not graduate. But we haven't really, in the health world, wrestled with it and what we can do about it or ought to be doing about it, since it is a health indicator. So the center was established at the American Public Health Association to advance school-based health care as a comprehensive strategy for preventing school dropout and improving graduation rates for the K-12 population. That's what happened in January of 2010. There's seats up here, and there's a seat there. There's a couple seats over there. Okay. So in January 2010, the center was established to provide a nexus for focus on graduation as a public health priority. Not that we're trying to become a child advocacy organization or child health advocacy organization. We are a public health organization, membership and advocacy organization, and so all the more reason for a center like this to be established at the American Public Health Association. And what we propose is a public health approach to population health, using school-based health centers as the hub of this activity, where at school-based health centers, primary care is delivered by a number of different providers, whether it be physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, and in some cases, physicians are providing care at school-based health centers for kids in particularly marginalized and disadvantaged communities around the country. There's about 2,000 of them, nowhere near the number needed, but there's about 2,000 of them working, and they see a little over 1 million kids every day, but they're located in devastated communities. So they have a phenomenal opportunity to integrate public health approaches to their work and reach all of the kids in that school, not just the kids who are enrolled in the clinic, but all of the kids in that school, with some public health practices and processes that can improve population health school-wide. So breaking down the walls of the health center to see the entire school population as the school, as the population of focus, as opposed to just, quote, clinic patients or health center patients. That is the approach that we advocate and that we promote at the American Public Health Association. So what does that mean in real terms, to integrate primary care with public health? Well, first let me start, yes, so what does that mean? It means that we're doing, for example, one of the typical things we do in public health is assessments. We look at the population, we look at the epidemiological data, we do programming and policy to move upstream for primary prevention. That's at the crux of who we are and what we do. That's a very fundamental part of integrating public health with primary care. And then we think strategically across multiple domains to respond to those issues, and we think broadly. So, for example, this is just quick. The reason for school-based health centers, I'm often asked why, it's because they're at the intersection of health and education. It's kind of a no-brainer. Okay, they sit in the school, they have the trust of families, the trust of kids, they have the trust of school personnel, and they can make a difference in the lives of these young people. So let's think about them in a different way. So when I say public health upstream, school-based health centers can look at these social and environmental factors that derail not only the health and well-being of young people, but also the educational success of young people. They are two sides of the same coin when you're talking about the K-12 population. An unhealthy kid cannot learn, and a young person who has not learned will not be a healthy adult. Okay, it's not really complicated, but we think in our silos, and so we don't necessarily break down those walls, build the bridges with the education community, and take it on in a way that we know we can in public health. So when I'm talking about social and environmental factors, when you peel away the reasons why young people do not do well in school and why they tend to be unhealthy. These are some of the major factors that you see over and over and over again that are not necessarily clinical in nature, but end up manifesting in clinical conditions, okay? So these are what we would call the causes, and the clinical conditions are the symptoms. And we do a great job at looking at the symptoms and treating them with love and compassion and support and everything that our primary care spirits tell us is the right thing to do. Where public health comes into the equation is partnering with primary care around some of these social and environmental factors that contribute to that kid ending up in the clinic and not doing as well in school. So just to go through this list very quickly, although we're going to focus on chronic and traumatic stress in this particular presentation, we have community and school aggression and violence. It's a major reason why, just look at your YRBSS data, it's a major reason why kids don't even go to school. Well, if you don't go to school, you're certainly not going to graduate. Hunger and food insecurity, you know, we have all of these wonderful programs, the breakfast program and the lunch program, but if the kids aren't eating it, or if it's stigmatized in some way, shape, or form, they're not going to participate in it. Okay, if they think it's for poor kids only, or whatever they think at that point, because we know adolescents are very concerned about what their peers think about them, so they don't want to be seen as poor. And so if it's not a universal breakfast program, you're not likely to get adolescents to participate in it. If it's not a universal lunch program, you're not likely to get adolescents to participate in it. If it's not food that they like, it will end up in the garbage pail. And so we have these policies and structures where we can make a difference around hunger and food insecurity. And any provider in a school-based health center will tell you on a regular basis, they give out packs and packs of granola bars and juice packs in the morning because kids haven't eaten since lunch the day before. And they come in with headaches and stomach aches and can't focus. And so they end up in the nurse's office or in the school-based health center with the headache. And it turns out when you talk to them in a way that's private and secure so they don't have to feel embarrassed, they haven't eaten since lunch the day before. So we know this intuitively that's an issue. Homelessness and the fact that we have 25% of our kids who are living in poverty, which includes homelessness. And those very same kids are the ones who are practicing risky sexual behaviors. The number one reason why girls drop out of school is an unintended pregnancy. Number one reason. And then untreated health conditions as well, such as asthma, which keep kids up at night and cause them to not be able to focus when they get into school. So the approach that we've used at APHA's, we have adopted a instrument called RAPS Public Health. RAPS Public Health. RAPS stands for Rapid Assessment of Adolescent Preventive Services / Public Health. And what it does is it looks at the behavioral factors, the traditional ones, okay? Are you getting enough fruits and vegetables, experimenting with drugs, tobacco and alcohol use, using a seatbelt? That's the similar questions to the ones that are asked on the YRBSS. However, it's developed a little bit differently because young people can take it individually on a tablet or on a computer, and it also can be read to them in case we have literacy issues, which in some of the communities we're talking about, we have literacy issues, and they can respond to different behaviors, and it goes right into the clinical record where the clinician can access it and intervene one-on-one with that youngster, depending on readiness and support for behavioral changes, okay? So the individual interaction is very important. What I'm talking about from a public health approach is the aggregate data. What you see across the school population when you administer this instrument school-wide, not just on the kids who come in the clinic, but school-wide. And you're able to look at 9th and 10th grade girls, 9th grade, 10th grade boys, and look at what's going on 11th and 12th grade, etc., and develop your strategies that are very tailored to the population. So that's what RAPS does. What public health did was add 9 questions that look at these issues. Homelessness, intermittent electricity, intermittent running water, hunger, literacy, And I say these issues because these are the issues that, for example, if you don't have electricity, you can't do homework. Okay? If you don't have electricity and you're on a nebulizer, you can't plug it in the wall and get it to work. Okay? So, and you can't wash your clothes if you don't have running water. So, and we know how adolescents smell. Okay, most of us have experienced that. If you have a teenager, they all go through it, okay, every single one of them, poor, rich, doesn't matter. They all go through it, and if you can't bathe every day and wash your clothes, you're going to have an odor, and you're going to get teased when you go to school, and you're only going to take but so much of that before you stop going to school. Now, I'm oversimplifying it here, but it's real for adolescents, okay, so if we don't give them a way to ask these questions, we often roll it up in a bucket and we call it poverty. That's what we call it. Oh, it's poverty. Well, if you don't unpack it and get down to the nitty-gritty, you can't do anything about it. You can't help resolve the issue. So you have to have a way where kids, young people, can be asked and respond in a way that's non-judgmental, confidential, and safe for them to be honest. And that's what this particular instrument does for us and why we have adopted it and appreciate it. And it gets at these areas. I already read the first column, the second column being caregiving responsibility, whether that's for a child or for family members, adult family members. We have lots of young people caring for older family members, and this varies by racial ethnic group as well. So that's why it's important to get really honed in on who we're talking about. Because you find a lot of adult caregiving in certain cultures in our country where that is you don't have anybody else caring for your elders or anybody else for your sick. You have children stay home and take care of them, okay? Grades, we ask about grades because that's a yellow flag, abusive dating situation, and asthma. And all the questions have been tested with kids to make sure the language is not our adult language. It's language that resonates for them, so that when you get a yes, it really means a yes. Thank you. It really means yes. Or if you get a no, it's not because it's the wrong question or they didn't understand the question. So what have we learned from this? This is the result from one or two schools in the inner city, a middle school, which was 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and then the high school, which is 9th through 12th grade. They're right across from each other, across a parking lot from each other in the same community. And these are some of the things that the Draps Public Health uncovered for us when we did it school-wide. And we had very high response rate, 78% and I think it was 87% or something like that in the two respective schools, but very high response rates. And these are some of the issues that young people revealed when they were asked about through that RAPS Public Health. We saw their level of sexual activity and, equally important, unsafe sex. Whether they were sad or had nothing to look forward to, which 30% in middle school respond they were sad or had nothing to look forward to. I think that's very telling. Carrying a weapon. And the rest of that question reads, carried a weapon because you felt unsafe. All right? So not necessarily because you're in a gang, like we often think, or you're just carrying a weapon because it's the macho thing to do, but they felt unsafe going to and from school. One kid, as you will see in a little bit, even having been raped on the way to school in the dark one morning, especially with some of the communities they have to walk through, and they're carrying a weapon to protect themselves. Now, I'm of the mindset, my gosh, they're going to school, right? They're going to school. They're walking through these neighborhoods to get to school. And in this particular city, transportation is a huge issue, okay? So they're walking to school, and so in order to get there, they feel like they have to carry a weapon to protect themselves. Something to think about. And then we see some other areas around getting in trouble because of anger and how we manage it. What this tells us, though, and there's more to this, is that our young people in certain communities are living in highly stressed, chronically stressed environments and experiencing it on a day-to-day basis. And that ultimately can affect their behavior and the resources that they need in order to do well in school. So the focus is on chronic and traumatic stress, as opposed to mental illness, although the behavior can often look like, and we consider it, we think about it, in terms of They need anger management. They need conflict resolution skills. They need this and that at the individual level, and not thinking about the more community, social, environmental factors that you can provide all the anger management in the world you want to provide. If we don't address some of these social circumstances that young kids are experiencing every single day, then we won't have enough mental health therapists to take care of the kids that are in need. So, and then let me go next to, here is the personalization. After we looked at the quantitative information, we went deeper to find out what was behind some of those responses and found statements like this. By having discussion groups, gender-specific, age-specific discussion groups, to get their story, to get their experience of stress, and equally important, how they cope with stress, right? We don't just want to uncover the problem. We want to be able to know, how do you cope? What's your best strategies for coping? So some of these read, they took away the swings and the play skate at the park. There's nothing but a basketball court there, and they don't even have nets. It's irritating and makes me sad. Another one said, bring all the rich people back to Detroit so they can fix it up. I would put them in our place to see how it feels to be us at the bottom of the food chain. All right? You pick somebody you want to punch, and then you punch them. Okay? What's stressful in my life is being raped and getting pregnant from it. There was like 13 people in that house. After a while, you know, there's not enough food and everything for everybody to be there. Okay? One winter we had no heat, we had no electricity, we had no water. It was bad. All right, this is real. These are quotes out of the mouths of these kids who experience this every single day. Is that, so if their behavior, and these are adolescents now, we're not talking about adults who have more highly developed coping skills, right? We're talking about adolescents, right, whose brain is still being developed and whose skills are yet to be developed. So if they were, you're experiencing some of these situations on a daily basis, it's only a matter of time before it manifests in your behavior. It's only a matter of time before it manifests in illness. It's only a matter of time before it manifests in not doing well in school. So, with that, what I'd like to do is turn this over now to our panelist, Dr. Amina Batata, who's going to talk about shifting the lens and provide a case study for us, and Dr. Olga Acosta-Price, who's going to talk about some of these same issues, but in immigrant populations, with adolescents and children from immigrant communities. As we know, our country is changing quickly, and so we needed to think about it, not only kids that we are U.S.-born kids, but also kids from different populations. So let me just take a minute to introduce Amina Batata. Is currently an assistant professor in the Department of Health and Wellness at the University of North Carolina, Asheville, where she focuses her teaching and scholarship on child health, media and health, community health promotion, health disparities, and global health. Prior to going to university in North Carolina, Dr. Batata worked as Director of Education, Research, and Outreach for Sesame Workshop India with the U.S.-based Center for Science in the Public Interest and in school health initiatives domestically. Dr. Batata earned her doctorate in health communication at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University and her master's in public health in maternal and child health with a concentration in international health at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Dr. Batata will present a case study entitled Shifting the Lens that describes how chronic stress manifests in an urban minority youth population, as well as describe the research and a youth engagement model for stress management. Followed by her will be Olga Acosta-Price. She's the director of the Center for Health and Healthcare in Schools at the George Washington University Milken Institute School of Public Health and is associate professor in the Department of Prevention and Community Health at the university. She's a clinical psychologist with postdoctoral training in school mental health. Dr. Acosta-Price, has a strong interest in prevention and early intervention programs that address the mental health needs of vulnerable children and their families, and has developed and evaluated programs promoting mental health and resiliency conducted in school and community settings. Dr. Augusta Price received her master's and doctorate in clinical psychology from the State University of New York at Buffalo and her undergraduate degree in psychology from Vassar College. She will discuss stress in the context of immigrant adolescent experiences and identify approaches to management that are relevant to this particular population. So with that, I say thank you.